A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta, say it like that. You gotta say it like science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling, but she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs, but Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous spotlight episode on science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Episode 511 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode, continuing with the chronology. And for those of you that have been following along with the chronology, at the end of the last chronology episode we did, which I believe was Witchblade 11, we saw a big Mephisto in the sky. And sure enough, it leads right into the Devil's Reign storyline, which is a crossover between Marvel Comics and Top Cow. I will say this. there's a few of the Cyberforce characters that show up in this Devil's Reign Part 1. I haven't read any Cyberforce except maybe the first issue way back when it first came out. And I don't know a lot about them, at least from back then. So for me, this issue was a little confusing, which is sort of disappointing, being that the chronology that we're reading is supposed to be all-inclusive. But the guy that put it together, Condor, does admit that he hasn't read a lot of the Cyberforce stuff and doesn't know exactly where it fits in. So I guess if you're an old-school Top Cow fan, you'll probably enjoy this more. And I also think that as the story goes on, it'll make more sense than it does here. It's just a little choppy, and mostly it's the fact that I'm not familiar with the characters. Don't know Weapon Zero, don't know a lot of the other characters. But I did notice they use the old comic trick of characters calling other characters by name, even when it sounds kind of hokey, like maybe that wouldn't be how they really would talk. But it does give a chance to identify everybody, so I did appreciate that. So this first crossover, Weapon Zero, Silver Surfer, from January, I think it's 1996. It's written by Walter Simonson. We've got pencils by Billy Tan, Mark Silvestri, and Kirk Von Wormer. Inks by D-Tron, Bat, Joe Weems, and Billy Tan. Colors by Richard Eisenhoff, Jonathan D. Smith, and Greg Hammond. Letters by Dennis Heisler. An ink assist by Victor Lamas. And then there's several covers. One's by Mark Silvestri, one's by Ron Garney, and the other is by Billy Tan. The art in this issue is top-notch. These are legends, right? Mark Silvestri, Billy Tan, the art is spectacular. It's really, really cool. So it opens up with Silver Surfer, and he's flying over a desert in California. And the one thing I noticed, I immediately went and looked at the year. I'm like, wait a second, Silver Surfer on Earth? Silver Surfer got freed in the early 90s. Why would he be on Earth? I guess he could be on Earth. He could just be in here for a visit, right? But I'm pretty sure that he did get freed, right? Like, that was a thing in the Silver Surfer mini. But the way that Simonson writes it here, it's as though he's still kind of trapped on Earth. So anyway, while he's flying over the desert, he spots some smoke in the distance. And I got to point out that Simonson really writes the surfer's dialogue as very flowery, and it's kind of, I don't know, I've never heard Surfer talk like that again. Maybe Simonson's channeling a little bit of his Thor dialect, but it was just very strange for me to see him talking. Like, who has dared wound the earth to grieve her so? Like, wait, what? So anyway, Surfer flies over, and he sees wreckage, and he says it looks alien in nature. He sees some dead bodies, assumes that they were scientists sent to explore or investigate whatever this was. But he does sense something down there in the ship still pulsing, and he senses that it's evil. So he, in wanting to protect the Earth, uses his power cosmic, unleashes a vast amount, and apparently destroys the ship even more than it's already destroyed, doesn't sense anything, and flies away. And then we see Mephisto show up, and we learn that Mephisto has actually tricked the surfer. He kind of pulled the wool over his eyes. Well, first he mocks the way Silver Surfer talks, and I can't blame Mephisto for that. But then what we find out is that Mephisto himself was drawn by that sense of evil that was in the ship, and he knew he didn't have the power himself to put it back together. And so he tricked the surfer into showing up and firing his cosmic power at the ship, which actually has the effect of allowing Mephisto to use that residual energy to put the ship back together. And all those bodies that the surfer saw that he thought were scientists who had been killed trying to investigate are actually souls that Mephisto has collected, that you know, he, that's kind of how he feeds, how he gets his pleasure by torturing souls that have, from people who have died when they're on their way to another afterlife, whether it be good or bad. Mephisto kind of redirects them, and that's basically who he is. It's how he derives his power. So once Mephisto gets inside the ship, he realizes that it's alien in nature, and he's able to kind of read the glyphs. He says they're easily read, and the ship belonged to a race called the Siri, and they arrived to pillage, and they were themselves destroyed in some long-forgotten catastrophe. And apparently, we see an editor's note, apparently the Siri are a race or an alien civilization that's currently showing up in the Weapon Zero title from Top Cow. And what Mephisto discovers is that Siri are not actually extraterrestrial in the way you might think. They're not just another alien race of the Marvel Universe. They've actually come from another dimension. And that dimension, of course, is the Top Cow universe that we know. So thanks to the energy provided by the Silver Surfer, not only is the ship, was Mephisto able to put the ship back together, but the ship's capacity to travel between dimensions is restored. And Mephisto basically flips the switch, and high above the Earth, a spiral of energy begins, and the ship disappears. So meanwhile, over in the Top Cow universe, there is a group of scientists in a facility just outside of Las Vegas, and they're called the AID, the Alien Investigation Division, and they're in a panic, and for good reason. They've detected this space-time rip forming above Southern California, and we know that it's being created by this ship that Mephisto is piloting, and they're trying to figure out what exactly is going on, but they're not exactly in great shape themselves, because there apparently is something loose down on level 23 of their base. So as this scene shifts to level 23, we actually see Weapon Zero and his allies. And again, these aren't any characters that I'm familiar with, but this is what I was talking about, where we see the characters call each other by name, like purposefully. So we do kind of get at least the ability to put a name with a character. And if you're interested enough, you know, you can check them out by doing a Google search or whatever, and probably get a little more information on him. But what we do see is that the enemy they're fighting, that being that was loose on level 23, is one of the Siri. And he's a berserker, as they refer to him. And they're having a tough time. It looks like there's, five of the supposed good guys of the protagonist that are Weapon Zero and his allies. And they're fighting against this berserker. And they don't really seem to be having much luck. And they seem kind of surprised at this. They're like, you know, we have fought these Siri before, and they've never had this much power. And they're kind of unclear why they're not able to defeat it. And then one of the heroes here, I'm trying to see if I can see his name. He decides that he's going to attack. And not only does he attack, but he decides that he's going to sacrifice himself, because they don't seem to be able to stop this Siri. In fact, he's growing larger and becoming stronger with every passing moment, and it doesn't seem possible. So basically, what this guy does is he stabs the Siri, and then teleports himself and the Siri out into open space so that the rest of his team can live. So apparently one of the team is his daughter, and she's obviously upset, but she doesn't want her father's death to be in vain. So although the kind of the regular security force, the people that we saw on those upper levels, you know, previous, they seem to be just kind of regular military. They do finally show up on level 23 and they tell everybody to stay there, don't leave. And one of them has the ability to teleport and teleports them all away. But as they're teleporting away, one of the group tries to separate himself from the rest for some reason. And we see when they reappear in a starship beyond the orbit of Jupiter, there's only four instead of the previous six. So we know that one sacrificed themselves, and then it seems that the other, Jamie, they're calling him, managed to get away or didn't make the trip. And Lilith, who is the teleporter, apparently tells Weapon Zero, hey, he tried to run off on his own and I teleported him out of there, but he must have like fallen out of the teleportation. So there's no way of knowing where he possibly could be. And, you know, my apologies, but he didn't really want to be with us anyway. It's not very responsible. And on the next page, we see this Jamie character actually in LA, and he seems to have his own kind of his own agenda. And he remarks that he didn't run out on His Majesty's press gang so he could serve in the Colonel's private army. So again, I'm not familiar with these characters. I'm not really sure what he's talking about, but clearly he didn't want to be with the people he was with. So he did escape from them. So maybe he'll be a kind of a third faction here, as opposed to on the hero side or on the Mephisto side. He may be somewhat of a loose cannon, or maybe he'll decide he does want to be on the side of the heroes. Again, there's not a lot of background. I imagine if you're reading the Weapon Zero comic at this time, you completely understand what's going on, but I've never read it. So again, I'm not really sure. On the next page, we see that the ship that Mephisto is in has completely come into the Top Cow universe, and we see some other beings. I'm not sure, again, who exactly they are, but apparently they're the bad guys, and they've sensed that the ship's come through. They're like, scans confirm. There's a fully developed space-time rift, and it's hard to pinpoint the source, but someone or something has arrived here via the rift. And when they first detected it, they feared that the Siri were betraying them. So clearly they know of the Siri and they might be returning to track him down. It is a Siri ship, but there's no Siri to be found, to be sensed. So they're not sure. They're confused. They don't really understand it. And then a voice off panel says, well, it's my first time here, so you'll excuse me if my, you know, rift in space wasn't perfect. It's the first time I've ever done that. And I'm delighted to meet someone so evil. And we see it's Mephisto. He's sensed that these creatures, these people, these beings, whoever, whatever you want to call them, are evil as well. And it looks like he's ready for a team up, as Mephisto always is, as long as he comes out on top, right? He's a master manipulator for sure. And so the two villains here are very surprised to see Mephisto on their ship. They're like, what, an intruder? How did he get past our alarms? We had no warning. And Mephisto's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm neglecting my manners. I'm a man of wealth and taste. Please call me Mephisto. And they attack him. And it's, of course, of no use. Mephisto claps his hands and changes the costume of one of them into a bikini. And says, this is much better. And she's actually impressed. She's like, wow, instantaneous matter transformation, cloaking, teleportation. This creature's like way ahead of us technologically. It's almost like magic. You know, little does she know that it kind of is magic to Mephisto. His powers are supernatural in origin. So he makes himself comfortable, sits down, orders a drink, and explains that where he comes from, there's a lot of competition for the souls of the dead, And so he decided he would take advantage of this ship that he found to teleport over. And what he senses is that in this universe, there isn't a lot of competition. So it's a virgin land with no rivals. And so he thinks it's a very unique opportunity. So he's found one likely servant of evil, and he's hoping to find more. And so he really wants these two that he's met to kind of be his guides, because he does also sense that there are a lot of unique beings in this universe. And obviously he's sensing people like, you know, the bearer of the Witchblade, the bearer of the darkness, the Cyberforce, all that. So, the heroes and the villains of the Top Cow universe. And again, his end goal would be to gather the souls of the dead here, maybe kill a bunch of people so that there's even more dead, and take those souls as well, because there's no competition. He's not fighting with Hell or Hela or Pluto or any of the other lords of the underworld in the Marvel universe for these souls. So he says, this is going to be great fun, and let's get to work. And so we'll see how that plays out with the other two supposed villains of the piece, who I'm unclear who they are. I'm going to assume that they are villains, antagonists of Weapon Zero, as they're affiliated with the Siri, and it seems like the Siri are the enemies of Weapon Zero. So shortly thereafter, in above the skies of Manhattan, we see Heatwave, who used to be a member of Cyberforce, and not sure why we're seeing him. He's talking about having to get away from the group, that he can't be Heatwave anymore. Something going on with his head, too many thoughts. He feels like he's losing it, like he's losing his identity. And at the same moment, in the mountains of Nepal, we see what kind of looks to be like a doppelganger of him, or maybe it's somebody else, maybe it's not him at all. But it's a being who says the cold no longer troubles him. He remains a separate entity, as though he's about to achieve some new state of being. So again, it's not sure what's going on here, but it certainly does look like Heatwave. So maybe he's been split in two in some way. Not really sure. Meanwhile, we see that Weapon Zero and his allies have arrived in LA. They've tracked Jamie there, and they believe that Jamie is their responsibility, and so they're going to track him down. And they're actually only a few blocks away from him, and Jamie's walking along the street when some girl pulls up in a convertible and says, "Hey, good looking, you seem lost, you want a ride?" And Jamie says, "Oh, sure," hops right in. He says he's got to make up for lost time, and he has a lot to learn. And the woman responds, "Don't worry, I'm a great teacher." So that's a little bit 90s, or a lot of bit 90s, really, when you think about it. And even back then, it seems like a pretty strange thing for some random woman to just pull over and ask a stranger to hop in her car. But maybe we'll find out there's more to her than meets the eye. So the story's going to continue in Devil's Reign Part 2, which came out, this crossover came out weekly. And also Weapon Zero number 11 next month, to probably tell more of the story of Jamie. We won't be covering that on the podcast. But as I said, it's a fun story, if not a little confusing, as I said. But again, I think if you're familiar with the Top Cow universe at this time and familiar with all these characters, you probably get a lot more out of it than I did. For me, it's just the bare setup, right? Like, okay, Mephisto found the ship, tricked Surfer into powering it up, and now he's over in the Top Cow universe. Like, as far as from what I know and what's important to me, that's kind of the only thing that happened in this issue. And then Mephisto, teleports over and he meets some people who I have no idea who they are. And we get the very beginnings of his plan. So as I said at the top of the episode, we'll probably get more out of it as we go along and have a little bit better understanding, especially when it starts to cross over with properties we know, like the Wolverine Witchblade, there's another Silver Surfer Weapon Zero, and there's a couple Wolverine Witchblades. So I think when it starts crossing over with those, we'll have a little bit better idea of what's going on. But it's kind of a pretty basic premise when you think about it. We understand just from this one issue, even though it read pretty fast, exactly what Mephisto's up to, right? Like exactly what his motivations are. So it's a 90s comic. It's a 90s crossover to be sure, with some really 90s art, bright colors, good rendering. The Mark Silvestri pages in this crossover are done especially well. But all the art is really, really solid. But you can just tell on those Mark Silvestri pages, which ones he did, they really stand out. But Billy Tan actually did the majority of it. Silvestri did the first five, and then Kirk Von Wormer did the next five, and then the rest of it's Billy Tan, which my favorite page, although I love the Silvestri art in the book, my favorite page, though, is a Billy Tan page at the end where Mephisto introduces himself to those two on their ship. It's full page splash. Mephisto's kind of towering over them, smoke behind him, and you can almost smell the brimstone. It's just done really, really well. So again, it's not, you can't read too much into this. I think that oftentimes on the podcast when we're doing the chronologies, I talk about the fact that as much as Top Cow had a reputation of being part of like that bad girl craze in the 90s, and Witchblade was like a cheesecake book that was just a chance for Michael Turner to draw women in scantily clad clothing, there might have been a grain of truth to that. But honestly, those stories really hold up well, and they do portray Sarah Pazzini in a very good light. She's not a ditz. She's not, she's a strong, powerful female character. She's very formidable with the Witchblade, and the fact that she's female is the Witchblade only like bond with a female, so that's why there's a female as the protagonist for the story. But it doesn't diminish her, it doesn't diminish the character of the Witchblade just because she's a female, which a lot of the 90s comics, the female characters, especially if they were headlining the books, were very two-dimensional. That's not what Witchblade was at all. So all that being said, as much as a lot of the Top Cow books at the time may have been not as high quality in storytelling or writing as Witchblade, they still were pretty solid, despite the reputation that they had. This one is a little more simplistic, and it would kind of have to be, being that it's a crossover between Marvel and Top Cow, because when you're using someone else's characters, you've got to tread a lot lighter, right? You can't, everything's going to be a little more on the surface. You can't really mess around with too many high concept things or story ideas that delve into deeply into the characters, right? Into their motivations and into their psyche and into their thought process, because you don't want to inadvertently do something to mess up the character or to have them do something out of character, or you might accidentally pull on a thread that they're planning on doing a while back, or you might pull on a thread that doesn't make sense in the context of what they've just done in their own book. So these kind of stories, they tend to be a little more on the surface, a little more two-dimensional. We don't really get a chance to explore like really great ideas, but you can kind of think of it as like a popcorn movie, right? Like a big summer blockbuster that's all about the visual spectacle, and you can't think about it too much or start paying too much attention, because then the plot holes and the hokey dialogue start to become a lot more obvious. I don't know that I could personally spot any plot holes in this, just for the fact that I wasn't really reading the Top Cow universe at this time. So again, I've mentioned that, but it does feel a little 90s. So Again, I don't think it's that means that we can't enjoy it for what it is. And when I saw Mephisto in the on the last page of Witchblade 11, I actually got kind of excited. I didn't even realize, I hadn't looked at the chronology in a while, and I didn't realize, and I'm looking at that demon, and I'm like, that looks like Mephisto. And then that kind of led me down the path of, oh yeah, Devil's Reign. I actually thought Devil's Reign was a little later than this. I thought it was closer to the year 2000, but obviously not. It's right here in 1996. So what is that, 4 years after Image was founded? Marvel came knocking. So that's pretty cool for Mark Silvestri and the gang. So we will be continuing the chronology, covering the Devil's Reign crossover. There are 8 parts plus a half issue from Wizard. So it'll be 9 episodes altogether. I'm not sure. I haven't got the schedule done for next month yet, so I'm not quite sure how far or how long it'll take me to get through all of these, because obviously we want to cover some other Top Cow content, especially with New York Comic Con coming up. So again, there's a link to the Comic Vine site with Condor's chronology in the show notes if you want to go and check it out to follow along and know what's coming up next. I encourage you to do that. And a lot of these issues, I usually talk about where you can find the issues. There is a trade paperback collection called the Top Cow Marvel Crossover Collection, Volume 1. I don't think it's still in print, but you probably could find it on eBay. And I don't think any of these issues are in demand. So probably could find them on eBay, track them down at a show. They're not particularly hard to find. I know I have several of them myself. I think I might actually have the hard copy of this Weapon Zero Silver Surfer. And I know for sure I have 2 copies of the Ghost Rider and Ballistic and 1 of the Ghost Rider and Sideblade. So just, you know, things you pick up over the years. I wish I had one of the Witchblade Wolverines, though. That one looks really cool. So anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode of Top Cow Thursday. Thanks for joining us, everybody. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. All past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you would like to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Next show I'll be at is New York Comic Con, the first weekend of October. Be flying in, probably get there pretty late on Wednesday, and then I'm leaving Monday morning. So if you are going to be at the show and you're a listener or a sometime listener, or you hear about The Comic Source in any way, shape, or form and want to meet up and get a free Comic Source lanyard and talk some comics, then just let me know. Reach out to on one of those social media sites, and I always love to meet fellow comic fans and Comic Source listeners. So once again, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.